Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. And you can also listen to podcasts available there or on the WDIY app. Today is October 26, 2022. The markets were mixed today with the Dow up, closing at 31,839, the NASDAQ down at 10,970, and the S&P down at 3830. Our topic tonight is market review of the third quarter and what to look for in the fourth quarter, as well as just some general investor education and topics. And I have with me this evening, not in person, but over the phone, we have Bill Henderson, who is our Chief Investment Officer at Valley National Financial Advisors. He joined the team with more than 30 years of experience, including 26 years at BlackRock. Bill leads the firm's investment department, chairs the internal investment committee, and directs all investment research efforts. In this role, he provides investment analysis and assists the advisory teams with portfolio strategy and asset allocation direction. He meets frequently with representatives from global asset managers to discuss their views about the economy and financial markets and how he lends his own current market observation in Valley National Financial Advisor, the weekly commentary email newsletter. Bill's a native of Pennsylvania and received his undergraduate and graduate degrees from Penn State University in the areas of finance and investments. And we will not be taking any calls this evening. If you have questions, you can send those through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com. Welcome back, Bill. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. Thank you, Lori. Thanks for welcoming me back. It's good to be here.
Okay. Well, thanks, Bill. We appreciate your insights and education on the markets and what we need to pay attention to and, you know, staying calm when all those around us may not be. So tonight, as I mentioned, we're going to review what we've seen kind of over the past few months and what we can expect the next quarter. But there are a number of topics that you watch as well. So I'm hoping that we can kind of weave those through our hour together here as we're talking about what you look for when we talk about the markets. What does that mean? And kind of what has brought us here today and maybe what the chatter is over the next few months, and then kind of talk about some of those other implications. So tell us about some of the, recent topics. Your free reign. It's your show tonight.
Sure. Well, thanks, Lori. It is important that we follow, similar market indicators, month after month and week after week, but also things come and go that are important. And I think it's good that we focus tonight on some of the items that we and the investment committee and the investment department of Valley National follow right now. And obviously, front and center, number one, is inflation. I was on your show about 2 or 3 months ago, and we talked a lot about inflation, and we talked about transitory and sticky inflation, and I think we explained the difference there. What we're really seeing here is persistent inflation. So persistent meaning it's sticking around a lot longer than anybody thought. And the one thing is, it's the highest it's been in 40 years. So, yes, a lot of people continue to say, this is the highest inflation we've seen in 40 years. That may be the case, but it was literally absent for about 30-plus years. So, so to say we haven't, it's the highest in 40, well, that's pretty easy to say since there was no inflation for almost 30 years. These are numbers that are brand new to us because for the past 3 decades, inflation has been largely absent from the investment world. In speaking, we didn't have to worry about it, And a lot of that, almost all of it, was due to technology. You know, the markets have consistently undervalued the implications of technology on the markets and what has happened in the economy and what's happened to manufacturing overall. Technology has had a real impact in that. But that isn't really changing what's going on right now, which is real inflation. The last number was well over 8%. You know, that's a really big number. So prices at the supermarket, prices at the pump, you know, prices that companies pay to pay for things are all increasing. And when you see an 8% increase, that's a big number. And I would say that taking it by itself as an 8% increase, 8.71 actually, do we really say that that's the way to look at inflation and not pay attention to anything else? Well, I would say let's look at a few other things. Number one, people are working everywhere and in every industry. There's almost job shortages across the board in everything from basic landscaping to trucking to service economy, restaurants, you know, professional services. Everyone is looking for people. So that is a really big deal. So a lot of people are working. We're seeing a lot of job openings, which, and I'll get to why I think all of these are important. Job openings are continuing, and wages are higher across almost every industry. I mean, literally, people are paying more to employ people. So what does all this mean? Well, number one, people can afford to pay a little bit more for things. I mean, I know that sounds a little, why would I be happy with inflation? Well, there's higher wages. A lot of people are working. Think about Social Security. I'll bet you a lot of listeners on NPR pay attention to Social Security. Well, next year they're going to get an 8.7% raise in their Social Security checks. That's a really big raise. And so it's not that all inflation is bad and taken in a vacuum. Let's just say, you know, it's a horrible thing. But when you look at the other factors that come with inflation, there are ways to look at this and say, well, I think we can deal with it in an effective way.
You're a half glass full kind of guy, I think. But it's true. I really like that perspective that you're going to be able to afford more stuff. But that is contributing to the inflation?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, certainly when you look at how we got here, it was a function of quite a number of things, all uniquely crashing together when no one expected it. So the pandemic hits. The entire world shuts down, and I mean the entire world shut down. All production halted for about a year. So that meant the supply that was in the system was there for the people to buy or sell, or manufacturers to buy and sell. But all new supply was stopped. New production was stopped. The next thing we had is, well, let's pump $7 trillion of money into the U.S. economy alone. That then gave people and economy, you know, businesses, because it wasn't just people that applied for government money. We had the PPP money. There was a lot of different funds flowing to a lot of different places. All of a sudden, everyone was flush with cash. They said, okay, let's buy. Well, there was nothing to buy. We were all bidding up the same 1 year's worth of inventory that was there before the pandemic. So everybody starts to go back to work. Now you start to produce things. Remember I talked about the cargo ships off the coast of California?
Yep.
You know, there was 75 at one time. We're down to zero. There is no backlog now. Inventory comes to the U.S. shores. It gets offloaded. It drives away in trucks and shows up on the store shelves. But that took a long time to unwind and to have an impact on the system. And we're still sort of suffering from all that.
Mm-hmm.
Other factors that have really started to come down in inflation. And, you know, the inflation number is sort of a looking back number. You look back at last month's prices. So it's not like I can say our price is going to be lower in the future. But what I can say is that raw materials like lumber and copper and oil and other materials that go into production are all back down to pre-pandemic levels. Gasoline was at $5 a gallon. Today I saw the Speedway. It was $3.85 near the office. Natural gas prices are half of where they were at the August price, August of this year. So we've seen a lot of inputs that go into inflation come down. That's going to have an impact on prices, but we won't know that until we start to look back at the current production, current prices, and current activity taking place in the markets today.
Great. Bill, we're going to go to our first break, but I want to leave you with something to address when we come back from the break. And that is one thing we pay attention to at the office, too, or where we can, you know, help folks look for good investments. And one of the things we've seen is an I bond. It's a Series I savings bond. And that is inflation-based and a fixed rate. The fixed rate's zero currently, but the inflation rate had been 9.62 for, you know, May through October. And I think that's projected to come down in November to 6.48. So it's really interesting to me when we talk about inflation and inflation going up, but then the I bond, how they calculate that interest, I'm not sure if you know. So when I come back from the break, I want to talk to you about that and see if that is some type of an indicator of where we might see inflation going. Folks, we are at our first break. We will be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Thank you, Sarit, and welcome back. I have in on the show with me this evening Bill Henderson, Chief Investment Officer at Valley National Financial Advisors, and we're talking about some of the market overview and some of the factors that help drive the markets and people's emotions, I would say, and reactions to those factors. So Bill was just talking about inflation and how inflation concerns persist. Of course, people talk about it all the time. They see it in the grocery store. But Bill has made some really good relevant points about, yes, we've seen some inflation, but we've also seen people working, job openings, wages are higher. We're going to see a Social Security raise for next year. We already had seen a nice one for this year, for 2022, and we've also seen some prices coming down, lumber, copper, oil, those types of things. So it's kind of a mix, and this is probably a natural progression in an economy. These are things that happen. It's not like a big surprise. It's not like they've never happened before. So we are hoping the Fed has raised interest rates to try to tamp down inflation. We are hoping that that will come down eventually. It might not be as fast as some people might think. But Bill, I was wondering, because I feel like people always think it's here and persisting at a high level, even though we've seen levels higher than this. It's been a long, long time. I love that you pointed that out, that we hadn't seen this kind of inflation for like 30 years. But I do know I bonds, which is, you know, it seems like everyone has heard about these rates because they're so good, 9.62. They reset those every 6 months. And I saw that it looks like it's projected to come down in November to like 6.48. I don't know if you know how those are calculated at all, but is that an indication? You know, you said we look backwards to see, you know, inflation, and we really won't know where it is, you know, until we go forward again. Is that any kind of indicator of where?
Yeah,
where
exactly, Lori. So an I bond is basically, it's called Series I savings bond, and they were created a fairly long time ago. Al Gore, Vice President Al Gore, was one of the masterminds behind it, if you want to call it that, where it was designed to help out with college savings, and that's why there's a limit on the amount you can purchase in any given year. It's $10,000 per Social Security number. So it's not like this is an unlimited government freebie.
Right.
And, you know, the concept was, let's have a way for people to save money for college, and it'll keep up with inflation. Now, obviously, inflation has college tuition has more than kept up with the old inflation that we were used to over the last 30 years. But going forward, so the current rate, which is 9.62%, has been in place from May 1st of this year to October 31st, which is, you know, next week it's coming up. And then they'll reset that level, and they reset it based on the prevailing CPI number and then a prevailing interest rate, and it's set for another 6 months. So what's important for your listeners to know, that if you buy it at 9.62 between now and
October
28th, Monday,
October 28th, they the site indicates you really should get it in by October 28th.
Right. You have to get it in there because it settles. So that is not the rate. After 6 months, a new rate comes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like a floating bond. It's not kind of. It is. It resets every 6 months. So you're not guaranteed the 9.6. But, you know, for the people that bought it in May, they were guaranteed that rate. And then it'll reset again with the new inflationary rate. And even if you believe that inflation you know, it's at this 30, 40 year high, and it starts to come down gradually. I mean, I don't foresee it coming down as fast as it went up. We don't have quite the things impacting prices on the way down that we had on the way up. Remember, I mentioned the forces that came together. Right. There's differing factors, and some things are stickier than others in terms of prices. Right, gasoline is a perfect example of sticky inflation versus non-sticky. The price of gasoline can change day to day, week to week, but other things, let's take college tuition, generally don't come down. I mean, you're going to need to see massive amounts of supply versus huge decreases in demand for college tuition to come down, but it's possible. So these bonds, 10,000 per Social Security, they reset with a interest rate plus the current prevailing inflation rate.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting that you said, you know, we're probably not going to see inflation come down as fast as we saw it go up. And because of these forces that all kind of happened one after the other, the pandemic, the shutdown, supply limitations, and then all of this money going into the supply, into the economy. Now, I recall, though, Bill, that it seemed like every economist at the time was saying, throw as much money at it as you can. I mean, I was surprised, but I was getting nervous about it. And I remembered it just seemed like every time they were talking to someone, they say, yes, we have to do this. Yes, we have to do this. But of course, at that time, we probably didn't know how long it was going to last. And then it seemed like, not that it's under control, totally under control, but it probably with the vaccinations, the vaccine, the COVID got controlled a little bit faster maybe than we thought. But this money is still out there, right? We have households with, you know,
households are in great shape.
Record savings, mm-hmm. et cetera.
One of the things I have on my whiteboard at the office is my own personal recession monitor. And I'll get to that, but I want to talk a little, real briefly about what you said. People kept saying, throw everything at it. I mean, the one thing in our Federal Reserve, and right now Jay Powell is the Chairman Jay Powell of the Federal Reserve, Fed governors are smart enough to learn from their predecessors. You know, and Ben Bernanke was the Fed chair during the Great Financial Crisis, so that's 2008-09. And that was a year and a half to 2 year awful time. I mean, I lived through that on the trading desks at BlackRock, and it was a really tough time. That was about 2 years of pain, and every month or so, every 6 weeks, a new product would come out from the Fed. We're gonna throw this at it. Maybe this will help. Oh, we have a new invention. Maybe this will help. Some new acronym, TARP, AMLF, whatever it was. But what Jay Powell learned from that was don't wait and drag this out over a year and a half. Mm-hmm. We have all these things we built during the GFC. Throw it all at the problem immediately over about 3 weeks, and you saw what happened. Everything was fixed. Liquidity came back to the markets. Banks got functioning again. The stock market functioned. The bond market functioned. And, you know, we got through it. But it's impossible to look back and say we threw too much at it because this was one of those things that nobody, and I mean nobody, had a playbook for a global pandemic. Everybody had a playbook for another GFC, another recession, another depression, stock market crash. But I don't ever remember seeing a pandemic. You know, this was like Y2K squared. You know, no one expected it. And so the Fed said, okay, let's just throw it all at that and see what happens. And looking back, I think they did the right thing. Yes, we have inflation, but, you know, we're not in a massive depression right now, which who knows what could have been had we not done what we needed to do.
Right. Very good point. And I think now, you know, it's just about us kind of getting back in balance a little bit. So when we come back from our next break, maybe you could give us some comments on, you know, the Fed and what they have done and what you see them doing and how that might help tamp down inflation a little bit or get us more on track. Folks, we are at our second break. If you have questions, you'll have to send those through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com, and we will be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show. We do have Bill Henderson, Chief Investment Officer at Valley National Financial Advisors, and we're having a very nice conversation this evening, Bill, talking about some of the factors that go into understanding the markets. We've talked about inflation. We've touched on recession a tiny bit, and the Fed. So if you'd like to kind of give us some input on, you know, the Fed's responsibility and what they've been doing. Some people, we talk about it all the time at the office and in our world, but there may be listeners who may not be as familiar with the impact that that makes.
Sure. Okay, thanks, Lori. So the Fed, essentially the Federal Reserve, and that, as I said, Chairman Jerome Powell is the head of the Fed right now, along with a lot of voting governors, and it's set up by various Federal Reserve boards around the country. It's a process put in place a long time ago to keep banks functioning properly so that there wouldn't be a depression-era run on the banks. So it has worked well. It's had hiccups and things along the way, but overall, it has allowed the American economy to be very stable, pretty much the place in the world to, you know, seek out stability. You look at the dollar; it's sound all around the world. So I'm done with my Fed speech there. But what the Fed is supposed to do is keep inflation at their average rate that they set, and right now it's 2.5%. So obviously they're a little above that number. Maintain full employment, and everybody has a different opinion about what full employment is. But at unemployment rate at about 3.5%, we're pretty close to full employment. And the other thing that the Fed does, and this isn't necessarily mandated, but it is important, adds liquidity to the market and are the buyer of last resort in the market. So that means when there's a time that the bond market or the stock market or something isn't trading properly, the Fed may or may not decide to add a little liquidity to that. And they may do it by becoming a buyer. They may do it by adding reserves to the system. But either way, they're the three things that the Fed looks at, and they're doing their best right now to maintain all three of those. And as I said, inflation is one of the things that's gotten a little bit out of control. And how they deal with that is raising rates. And you've seen this year, everybody knows, I mean, this is why I bonds are where they are. The Fed has raised rates. And you're looking at a point where potentially at the next meeting, which is coming up in November, where they may raise rates another 75 basis points. That would put the rate at about 4%. Right now, the Fed funds target, so that's a rate that the Fed sets for banks to lend money back and forth to each other. It's 3.25. Another 75 basis points would be 4%. What the Fed has said, and this is in what, you know, like really modest hints in some of their speeches, is after the 75 basis points, we're going to continue to be data dependent. Now, that doesn't mean that they're going to stop raising rates, because I don't think that's the case, but it does mean that they are going to pay really close attention to what happens to the data. So I mentioned earlier about inflation being backward-looking. Let's say we start to get a few numbers of inflation ticking down, 8.7 to 6.7 to 5.7, you know, to 4. Okay, they're saying, well, raising rates, it's working, because the downside of raising rates is it slows the economy.
Mm-hmm.
Slowing the economy means what? A recession. And everybody's talking about a recession. Well, I mentioned it a little bit that in my office I have on the whiteboard on the wall, the five things that I look at to determine whether or not a recession is here, and I call it, you know, are these things capitulating? Are they rolling over? And the five things I pay attention to are housing, the consumer, banks, employment, and earnings. And so far, four of the five are doing well, continuing to do well. The one that has started to slow is housing, and that can be directly tied to higher mortgage rates, over 6%. This time last year, they were at 3%. My daughter locked in a mortgage last year. I believe it was 3.125%. You know, we're not going to see that anytime soon, and that impacts what's called the affordability index. That's the combination of, you know, income and home prices and mortgages, you know, mixed together and said, this is the index that we're going to use to decide our house is more affordable or less affordable. Well, housing is starting to show a little bit of capitulation, which will have an impact on the economy. The consumer is still very healthy, as you pointed out, flush with cash, mostly employed. Banks are still in great shape. Positive, healthy balance sheets. Remember the GFC. Every bank, with the exception of maybe a few, were in trouble. Mm-hmm. The Fed had to literally bail out every bank. When was the last time anybody cared about a bank stress test? Mm-hmm. So banks are still in great shape. Employment, as I mentioned, unemployment at 3.5% is solid. We continue to hire. There's labor shortages. There's job openings. Still a positive. And then lastly, of the five, earnings. Corporations are still announcing earnings estimates that beat the street. I'm sorry, earnings that beat the street estimates. So analysts estimate what companies are going to earn, and then the idea is for companies to beat those estimates. Absolutely, analysts have lowered expectations. So I equate that to either moving the field goal closer and or having the kicker move closer, but they still made a field goal. So corporations are still beating estimates, and they're still making money. And we're seeing that in dividends. We're seeing that with stock buybacks. So four of the five things that I look at, whether or not we're going to have a recession and one that's severe or deep, have not yet turned over in my mind in terms of the where we are in the economy.
That's really interesting, Bill. So those five markers that you kind of watch, again, housing, consumer spending, basically consumer health, banks, employment, and earnings per share. And so it's really a teeter-totter, isn't it? The Fed trying to balance all this. So the reaction that was needed during the pandemic, we've come back from that, and now it's kind of trying to put things back in balance. It's like shocking your pool, your swimming pool, for people who know about swimming pools. Sometimes they get out of balance. You got to shock them.
You're so right. And, you look at even simple things like loan delinquency rates. These are numbers reported by banks. They're still very, very low, which is like tied to the consumer. You know, the consumer only starts to become delinquent on loans when they're in trouble. So bank delinquency rates are down, consumer delinquency rates are down, which means some of the underpinnings of the economy remain really sound.
It's so interesting because, you know, this is where people really have to kind of be careful how they filter the chatter and the headlines. I know that quite often if you watch CNBC, it's breaking news, breaking news, breaking news all the time. And I used to laugh going through the office saying, oh my gosh, the market's up today. Oh my gosh, the market's down today. This is part of that journey. Folks, we are at the halfway point. We are talking with Bill Henderson, who is the Chief Investment Officer at Valley National Financial Advisors. And we come back from our break. We're going to talk a little bit more, hopefully, about what does that mean, you know, in recession, what could we expect? Bill mentioned that how deep could the recession be? Sometimes we might come out of these things very quickly if we do dip our toe into that. So we will talk more with Bill Henderson when we come back from the next break.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Thank you, Sarit. This is Lori Siebert, your host, and my guest this evening, Bill Henderson, Chief Investment Officer at Valley National Financial Advisors, coming to us with 26 years of experience at BlackRock. So Bill is all about talking about all of these forces that impact the markets. And Bill is almost like our barometer at work. He kind of keeps the folks calm and with his whiteboard watching those factors that might play into a recession. So, Bill, what you were saying, of the five that you kind of watch, four look pretty good that aren't flashing the signals for a recession. But there is still a lot of talk about that in the markets, and people make it sound very scary. Can you kind of give us a little bit of either maybe some history of that or kind of your insights on perspective?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, we know what the news wants to sell, and CNBC is a news outlet. Fox News is a news outlet. These didn't exist I don't know, 25, 30 years ago, I think, I'm guessing. I don't remember them being a thing that long ago. And they can't just keep having a ticker tape roll across the screen. I mean, that's what you used to have, remember? I mean, people probably don't even know what the heck a ticker tape parade is, but it was all related to Wall Street, the ticker tapes, you know? But that would be really boring, just showing stock prices across the bottom of the screen. So they have to come up with things that grab people's attention. And a recession, unfortunately, is one of the things that grab people's attention. So wait, a recession's coming? I should pay attention to this. But when I look at the things that have typically run us into a recession, we're not there yet. I've never talked in absolutes, except saying that I never talk in absolutes. I don't think we've ever gone into a recession with 3.5% unemployment. Labor always leads a recession. So we have to start seeing, you know, really serious layoffs. And I don't mean like Meta, you know, Facebook, you know, we're not hiring 1,000 people this year and calling that a layoff. You know, I mean like real layoffs, manufacturing layoffs, banking sector layoffs, things where it's going to start impacting people. And we're just really far from that. So I know you and I talked about this a little bit about bull and bear markets. Why does one scare people and one doesn't really make people super happy when they should have equal impacts on people?
Mm-hmm. Yep, go ahead.
Okay, great. So I think it, you know, obviously right now we are in a bear market, right? It's mm-hmm. This whole year we've seen some pretty decent suffering across the equity markets. You know, the S&P, the Dow, and the NASDAQ are all down double digits. And we've talked about that.
Oh, Bill,
seem so painful, Bill, when we have a bear market versus the sort of pleasure that we get out of a bear market? And, I mean, the simple answer is, you know, people hate to lose money. Obviously, people hate to lose money. But when I looked at the numbers in preparation for tonight's show, the average bear market lasts about 1.2 years. So we're not even there yet. A bear market occurs about every 7 years and has an average decline of -37%. Now, this is on the S&P. So we're not really in the 1.2 years yet, and we're not down 37% in the S&P. Now, I'm not saying that we're going to get there, but I'm just telling you what the average bear market does. The average bull market lasts 6.7 years, and you have an average increase of 362%. Me, I'd rather wait the 6 years, get the 362%, than worry about the 1.2 years where I'm going to suffer a loss. But it certainly seems that people feel the pain of a bear market a lot more than they feel the happiness associated with a bull market. And other things, when you think about over long periods of time, and you know, you and I have talked about this a lot, it's not timing markets, it's time in the markets. Mm-hmm. But when you think about the S&P over the last 5 years, it's up 50%. Over the last 10 years, it's up 171%. But yet in 2022, it's down 20%. And that's the issue that everyone wants to talk about. But because it's the last issue on people's mind, and people say, I've lost 20% of my assets this year. But have they lost it? Did they sell? And that's one of your great points. You didn't sell it. It's a paper loss. And until you sell it, it's not a loss. So certainly, you know, the markets, everyone wants to say, what has the stock market done for me lately? Well, this year, they haven't done a whole lot. And generally, bear markets are typically associated with pretty bad things. So like, you know, the crash of 29, you know, the tech craze of 1980, the tech craze of 1970, and then the tech bubble of the 2000s. We had the great financial crisis that I've talked a lot, and then COVID in 2020, and then this rapid global inflation, which affected everyone, is really having an impact on the markets. But let's talk a little bit about timing the markets. This is something that I said you and I have talked a lot about, and I want to break things down a little bit. And I'll give you a sports analogy, if I may.
Yeah.
I mean, I've lived in Philadelphia area 57 years. I love it here. Finally, we have some really great winning teams. So let's give a Bryce Harper. He hit the home run in Sunday's game to bring us to the World Series. Bryce's batting average is 286. That means generally, at bat, 100 times he's going to hit 29 times. But most games he strikes out or he hits a homer. So that means he either strikes out or he is a star. If you look at the way the stock market has performed, it's very much like that. If the stock market averages 10.5% over the life of the market, there's actually very few years when the market has returned 10.5%. It's usually way lower or way higher. Much like Bryce getting up to bat isn't going to always hit 286. He's probably either going to strike out or hit a homer. The market is probably going to do the same thing. And in fact, just like Bryce, more years out of not, in fact, 71 out of 100 were positive versus the opposite being negative. So overall, the market returns positive levels, but the psychological impact of behavioral finance on people is to really only worry about the years when you're negative.
And that's the key word, behavioral finance, because I don't think that they throw Bryce Harper out when he strikes out, right? They don't kick him off the team because they know on average he does his job and does his job, you know, very well, especially recently.
Right. Well, for $330 million, they're hoping he does do a good job, and he did.
Right. But, you know, just like when you said, you know, you'd rather stick it out for the 6.7 years rather that it has shown a return of 362% versus the bear markets that are last an average of 1.2 years with a decline of 37%. You want to stick in for the long run. And I just want to remind people that, you know, some of the things we talk about with clients, and again, it goes back to this behavioral finance that Bill mentioned, and I think we've talked about that as well on prior shows, Bill, is that we want to make sure that people have their emergency reserve, their cash on hand, the money set aside for those big expenditures. We're not talking about people being 100% in the market and chasing those kinds of returns. We're talking about diversification, which can have an allocation. You can have equities, you can have fixed income, you can bonds, that type of thing. You could have some real estate, some diversification that helps balance the returns that, you know, we see in markets and how they move. Different sectors behave differently throughout a cycle. But also that you have the cash on hand that you're not having to get out of the market when it's down. That's how you can tolerate the 6.7 years. I guarantee you that if Bill's going to wait 6.7 years, he makes sure he has some cash in the bank for his emergency reserves or to buy that new car or whatever it might be. Right, Bill? So we talk about it's not just about watching the markets. It's about having conversations about what else you're doing with your asset allocation.
Right. Lori, that's 100% correct. I mean, you know that. I know the team is always talking about, you know, having the right number of years of liquidity. And you know, I'm not a financial planner. I don't even pretend to be one on the radio. I just, I talk about investments. But I've heard you talk many times about the important thing is to have the amount of cash you need on hand so that you don't have to pull at a time like this. You don't want to be selling now. You want to be, if anything, you want to be investing now. And one thing to point out, during a slowdown, during a recession, during a time like this, the best companies will actually take this time to retrench and build and grow stronger. And a lot of times, the best companies actually capture more market share and come out on the other side of this a lot stronger than they went in. And that leads to a really, really solid rebound when we do get to a point where the markets rebound. The best companies are the ones that are going to perform the best. And sometimes it takes this type of a slowdown or, you know, a modest recession to sort of weed out some of those companies and see which ones are the best and which ones are going to come out stronger and better and, you know, give investors a great opportunity.
So, Bill, what do you see going into, like, the end of the year? We've heard statistics that when the market's been down the first 6 months of the year, we typically see some type of rally in the last 6 months. We haven't seen that really happen yet. Do you anticipate some type of, you know, we've been seeing over the past several days a little bit of the green, a little bit more. What do you think is going to happen toward the end of the, I mean, you can't make, you know, we can't say
right.
This
no,
is
I
definitively.
Understand. Up about 5%. And October is shaping up to be a really strong month for investment returns. Now, shaping up, you know, all the right words in there to give your listeners the caveats that I'm not a, you know, I'm not predicting, but I believe the market is generally 6 months to a year ahead of what people think. I'm a huge believer in the efficient market hypothesis, which says that every single piece of information that's available is already priced into the markets. So what are markets rallying on? The markets are rallying on things that we don't know about yet. And it's probably already thinking the Fed's going to slow down. The Fed's going to halt or slow interest rates sometime next year. We might have a modest recession, but it won't be deep. Companies are going to come out stronger, and the market will rebound. You know, whether that's the next 3 months of this year or it's a little bit the beginning of next year, I think both of those are very possible. We're still going to continue to see lots of volatility, but we have the midterm elections coming up, and I know you don't want me to get into politics, but the midterm elections will probably bring, you know, a little bit of a slowdown to one-sided policies, either one way or the other, like they do in every election cycle. Whether it's Republicans in or Democrats in, midterms usually change the power of the incumbent party and slow down some of the policies that maybe the market was getting sick of. Either way, and I'm not taking a side here, I'm simply saying that we'll reach a point where new things or uncertainty, and I've said this a bunch on the call with you before, the market absolutely hates uncertainty. And, you know, until we have an outcome on the election, uncertainty is going to be here and we'll have lots of volatility. But it looks like, you know, Republicans will take modest control of the House, may maintain a little bit of control in the Senate, but nothing's going to be ironclad either way, especially since Joe Biden is our president and he is a Democrat. So we'll see a little bit of gridlock, which the markets tend to like gridlock. And when you look back at all the previous third terms of presidents, the markets have generally rallied. So if I could
in the third year, in the third year, not the third term, the third year, in their third year.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. We haven't had a third term. You and I weren't even around the last time our president hasn't had a third term.
Right. Yeah, but we understood. So typically we see a rally in the third year, you're saying, historically.
Right. So typically, I mean, if you look back at all the third year of every president, I think since Truman, they have, not including Truman, have all rallied. And there's usually extenuating circumstances for why that one time happened. But that's probably, if you think about it, I'm not a big believer in, you know, correlation and causation. The two go hand in hand, but it's probably because along with the third year comes gridlock because the incumbent party in the House or the Senate changed and halted policies from going one way, one side, or one way, the other side, too far. And that's what the market might be anticipating. So that might have been the longest possible answer to your question without answering it. Do I think we're going to rally between now and the end of the year? I think we already have rallied. Whether we wind up at a zero level for the year, like a big rally, that's a tough one because I think there's still a little bit of uncertainty with the Fed. But, you know, we'll see that. We have two more meetings this year where we'll see, get further information from Jay Powell.
Okay, good. We're at our last break, Bill, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion. And I would like to talk a little bit about asset allocation and the impact when we talk about being in the market and not in the market and behavioral finance a bit. So folks, you're listening to Your Financial Choices. I have with me Bill Henderson, Chief Investment Officer at Valley National Financial Advisors, and we'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Thank you, Sarit. Welcome back. I am speaking with Bill Henderson, Chief Investment Officer at Valley National Financial Advisors. We've just been talking a little bit tonight about, you know, the market, what influences the market, some factors, and hopefully bringing some insights that help you consider your own situation and kind of inform your decision making when we talk about the behaviors that people have, the emotional roller coaster of investing that, frankly, many investors count on those people to act emotionally and get out of the market. And it's interesting, to me, Bill, this is what I kind of wanted to kind of wrap up in the last part of the show with you, is when we talk about the markets, people think every day the market's down, the market's down. They might be looking at the Dow, or if the market's up, either way, the market. And they have to understand they're not necessarily invested exactly like those market indicators that we use to kind of put the news out. So we're talking about the Dow being down, or the NASDAQ, or the S&P. Typically, we are not seeing people invested in mirror style of that. We talk about, when we talk about asset allocation, we'll hear people say 60-40 or 70-30, and typically that's stocks and bonds. But even that isn't enough of the story. There's different types of assets that we can invest in, large cap, growth, value, mid cap, small cap, international, domestic, all kinds of mixes on that. But what I wanted to just also point out, one of my favorite charts that you put together in what we call our weekly playbook is one called the asset allocation performance. And I've had a number of times where people say, I'm losing money. And they are talking about losing money off the peak. And I also tell folks we don't look at the performance off the peak, because remember, there's volatility, it's up and down. We're looking at performance over a period of time, not a moment in time. And this allocation, asset allocation performance, talks about different portfolios, 100% stock to 100% bonds. And it is striking, the difference in the returns over a period of time. And as it happens, that chart is from 2008 to 2022. But it's back to your story of the average bear market lasting 1.2 years and having negative 37% return, and the average bull market being 6.7. So when we go from 2008 to 2022, we are talking about, what is that, 14 years, but it's staggering the difference in the returns these different types of portfolios can provide people. So if you wouldn't mind, Bill, just kind of talking a little bit about, yes, you have to understand the markets. Yes, we have to, be respectful of inflation and recession and how the markets are working, and all of those factors you talked about, that inform the, recession monitors, the housing, the consumer, banks, employment, all of that. But can you talk a little bit more from an individual level, that factoring all of that in, what kind of homework, or what should our listeners really be kind of focusing on that would help them? And again, this isn't specific advice. We can't give specific advice. This is an educational show. But what do you see really impacting people more than, watching the headlines, if you can?
Lori, I think people should probably set their investment plan, be specific about their goals and objectives, be really specific about what their risk tolerance is, meaning if you're a risky investor, let your advisor know that. If you're a risk-averse investor, let your advisor know that. And then once that's set, review it, infrequently. Worry about, and I know this sounds crazy, but worry about other things, because if you look at that one chart that you're referring to, over really long periods of time, most of the risk in the markets, whether it's stocks, bonds, commodities, whatever, over long, long periods of time, I'm talking 10 plus years, negative years are actually taken out of the picture.
Mm.
You have to see what I mean. If you look at if you said to me, Lori, I want to put money in the, I'm sorry, you're Lori. Mm-hmm. I want to put money in the stock market, but I only want to put it in for 1 year. What's my potential return? I would say, well, you could lose 58% of your money, or you could potentially get 78% of your money back. A 78% return or lose 58. And he said, well, how about 5 years? It would be a little bit different. It would be a little bit less negative and a little bit less positive. How about over 10 years? Over a 10-year period, almost all of your returns would be positive. Mm-hmm. You would take out, remember, because I said, the bear markets last shorter than bull markets, and over really long periods of time, you take out a lot of that risk that is associated with yearly returns. Investing really should borderline on like boring, meaning you don't want to be in something that's going to keep you up at night, and you don't want to think about it every day. That's what we do. That's what I do. I mean, what do I do on the weekends aside play golf and do other things? I read the Wall Street Journal. I'm sure that really makes me one of the most exciting people on earth. But I love reading the Wall Street Journal. So other people might not like to do that. And let worry about things that make you happy. Worry about something else. And I really think like sharp moves or aggressive turns in your investment portfolio lead to long-term losses over time. And I want to point out one thing. You said, you know, year-to-date, the S&P's down 19%. But in 2021, it returned almost 27%. In 2020, a little over 16%. And in 2019, almost 29%. There are three great years right in a row. And remember I mentioned that the average is 10.5% a year? Mm-hmm. So when you have those 3 years in a row, you're bound to get a number that reverts to the mean. But if you looked at the data over 10 years, you'd be happy. And you wouldn't have time periods where you really worry about things and really keep yourself up at night. Gosh, I'm down 27%. You absolutely are. But, I mean, these are the things that happen. And back to my point earlier about markets like this and recessions and downturns give other companies that have the wherewithal to withstand it, the ability to grow, invest in their future, make technology investments that, when things turn around, they'll be the best performers. And that's when the market could take off.
Mm-hmm. We have folks who might do investing through retirement plans at work. Sometimes those are the only investments that people might have. You've heard of target date funds. That is something that typically someone can set it and forget it. And they are trying to mimic, I would say, a risk tolerance appropriate for a time horizon. So more like when we talk about target date funds, it's like age based on retiring. So if I'm 21 years old and I can't make a decision about what investments I might go into, a default that a 401k plan might have, because employers are, you know, encouraged to have investment options that meet a lot of criteria that their participants might have. And if their participants can't choose an investment options, typically the employer plan sponsor has to have like a default. And the default could be a target date fund. Target date funds, then, if we have someone who's 21 and they go into a target date fund, they might say that could be a 40-year fund. So typically, Bill, that would be something that could be mimic something that would be a little bit more aggressive. Do you have any experience or comment on whether that is something that could be boring for people that they might set it and not have to think about it as much? And again, we can't make investment recommendations.
Right. Look, you summarized it well. I mean, go back 35 years. I think it about that. It might be longer. 401ks didn't exist. Everyone got a pension. You got a fixed pension. You retired. You got a gold watch. You got a set amount of money for the rest of your life. You didn't have anything to worry about. Retirement came. Pension plus Social Security, you were set. Then came 401ks where you were charged with saving for your own retirement, but the company would match it, so it was a great deal for everybody. It grew tax-free. However, what do I invest in? What am I supposed to put my money in a 401k plan? Sometimes companies had great choices, growth fund, a balance fund, a bond fund, a fixed-rate fund. Sometimes they didn't have any choices at all. Sometimes they didn't give you any direction. So I don't know who invented the target date fund, but for the novice investor, what you do is you say, I am 30 years old. I plan to retire when I'm 65. I pick a target date fund that targets my year when I hit 65, and that fund then adjusts the internal risk tolerance of the fund based on your age, so that when you retire, you don't have all your money in risky assets. You have a good portion of it in risky assets, and you have some of it in non-risky assets, so that going back to the cash part, you use some of the money when you need it and you leave it invested. So I think they offer something where investors need a little help in choosing how they would like to invest their money. And generally, target date funds are in retirement plans, but not always. You could probably get them outside of retirement plans, but really they're based on your targeted retirement date. Okay. So it offers an option. I would still say, you know, talk to a professional, someone like you, about it. And, you know, it's always great to get a second opinion, right? I mean, we get that for doctors, and that's mm-hmm. probably less important to a lot of people than their own money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all good points tonight. I appreciate you taking the time to share your insights and wisdom with us and share some of the factors that you're watching to help inform decisions that may impact investments based on, you know, where you see the markets going and recession, inflation, and all of that. But really, steady as she goes, I would say, and kind of sticking to a discipline is the biggest takeaway tonight.
Yes. And pay attention to some things in the market, you know, read the basics and watch for some of my indicators and where things wind up. And when I come back on after a while, we can see how my predictions held up.
I love
there
it.
There are very few predictions. I mostly inform the audience, which is you tell them, that's what you tell me what to do.
Make a note of it on your whiteboard, Bill, and then we'll revisit it. Say noted. October 26th. October 26th. Thank you so much, Bill Henderson, Chief Investment Officer of Valley National Financial Advisors, and we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks, Bill. Listeners, we are going to have attorney Peter Ioria from Fitzpatrick, Lentz & Buba on next week, and we are going to talk about some estate planning topics and hopefully some antidotes. I thought it would be really fun to kind of talk about some, you know, generic stories that we see in estate planning to help demonstrate the need for careful planning and having your documents in order and your asset titling, etc. So I look forward to having attorney Ioria on the show next week. And we thank you, Sarit, for being here. And thank you, listeners, for being here. And Bill Henderson, of course. I've talked about next week, we have Tom Druckenmiller coming up with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.